Good morning. You are listening to Love Sport Breakfast with me, Richard Lee, and Patrick Christie's. Let's go through some of your top headlines today, shall we? Sheffield Wednesday have reported Newcastle United to the Premier League over the appointment of their former manager, Steve Bruce. Bruce, who last managed in the top flight 4 years ago, resigned from his post on Wednesday after just 18 games in charge and agreed a 3-year deal with the Magpies, taking coaches Steve Agnew and Stephen Clements with him to the northeast. Arsenal have reached an agreement to sign Real Madrid midfielder Dani Ceballos on loan for the rest of the season. I think it's Ceballos. Is that close enough?
I'm not. Ceballos. I'm not legally allowed anymore to try to pronounce foreign names.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, after the last incident.
You're not allowed. No.
You can't do that again. My word. The 22-year-old has 6 caps for Spain and has 56 Real Madrid appearances to his name. Unai Emery is also set to bring in 18-year-old centre-back William Saliba from St Etienne for $27 million, although he'll be loaned back to the French club this campaign. Great Britain's Adam Peaty won a third successive World Championship gold in the 100-metre breaststroke last night, with compatriot James Wilby taking silver. Petey smashed his own world record in the semi-final, becoming the first man to go under 57 seconds in the event. And Cristiano Ronaldo has avoided any charges after being accused of sexual assault. US prosecutors have ruled the alleged incident took place in Las Vegas hotel 10 years ago. In a statement, prosecutors said the claim could not be proved beyond reasonable doubt. Those are your headlines this morning. I am joined here myself, Richard Lee, with, of course, you've heard his voice already. You've been waiting to hear from it all day, I'm sure, all morning. Oh, I don't know what time you woke up. It's Patrick Christie's.
Hello, hello, Rich. How are
you? Good morning. Yeah, very well. Very well. Yourself?
Yeah, really good, actually.
You look well today.
I'm on a health kick.
Yeah, you did a run, I hear.
I did a run. A run yesterday, and I've even brought a tub of salad with me, which I've not done since I had to look after the school hamster.
Yeah. Well, you went for the run.
Yeah.
You have got this salad with you, which is kind of in a blender.
It's in a blender, yeah.
So you're going to blend the salad?
I don't know. Mind you, mate, I'd just like to reserve the right to do that if I so wish. You know, we'll see. We'll see how we go. But at the minute, I'm eating it whole.
Okay, nice. And good. You feel good for it?
Well,
You look sprightly.
It certainly doesn't feel as good as a medium rare steak with blue cheese sauce, so maybe double cooked fries. Oh, gosh.
But you're getting yourself excited. I can see the saliva dripping down.
Bit of bacon.
Yeah, now look. Let's change the subject.
Okay,
Let's change the subject.
Just
think of lettuce, tomatoes. Think of those fantastic vegetables you can get.
Yeah. Right, okay, should we do some news?
Yeah, let's look at some of the top headlines.
Right, fantastic.
David De Gea wants to be captain. Is he captain material? Of course, it looks like he's about to sign this contract. £117 million contract.
Yes, not bad, is it?
It's going to be quite nice the moment he squiggles his signature on that piece of paper, isn't it?
Gosh, I just think I would assume that if I ever was in that situation, I know that as soon as I'd finish writing the signature, I'd wake up and it'd all be a dream.
Yes.
And I'd actually still live in this bedsit. You know?
Yeah, realise you're not £117 million richer.
No, I mean, I thought it was weird at the time because I didn't even really play football. But anyway, right, Mick De Gea, leader. This is obviously on the back of the Sun. I mean, look, I think he probably is captain material. He's been Manchester United's, apart from a window at the end of last season, he's been United's best player for a number of years, I would argue. So, yeah, why not? And I mean, this might go a long way to explaining exactly why he's decided to stick around at Old Trafford.
Yeah, well, you're right. He has been player of the year several times. He is well liked by the fans. Okay, he didn't have the best end to last season. I guess this is the point, is that he didn't have the best end to last season. So it's actually going to be a massive start to the season for him personally, you feel, especially if he signs his contract. Because if he starts this season how he ended last season, he could soon upset a few fans,
I think like the charge that was levelled at him really at the end of last season was that he knew he was leaving, he wanted to leave, you know, his head had gone and he was already somewhere else. But now he signed the contract, you would assume that all of that's gone, all of that's stopped. And if that is what was distracting him, then he hasn't got that distraction anymore. And also when he first came to United, we can remember him being a bit of a shambles, especially coming for crosses and things. And, you know, Ferdinand and Vidic, who it was at the time in front of him, were losing it with him. And there were big questions as to whether or not he could really make it in the Premier League. So he's been through all that before, you know, and he's come out of it exceptionally well. So I'd expect him to do the same.
You would think. It'd be nice for him now. Sign this contract, maybe get another place in Manchester. Anywhere you'd recommend?
Yeah, Cheshire, Hale Barnes.
Yeah,
Hale Barnes Way, or, you know, Moss Side.
I hear it's up and coming.
Yeah, with gang crime.
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
That's
maybe avoid Moss Side.
I once broke down in Moss Side.
Ooh.
Yeah, not good. Not a good day.
No.
Well, luckily, the car I was driving at the time was so shockingly bad that no one would have nicked it.
Fantastic. So
it was all right.
You thought it through.
Oh, yeah. Well, planned ahead. So, England take on Ireland in Ireland's first ever test match tomorrow at Lord's. quite a landmark game. So, but the MCC, who obviously is Marylebone Cricket Club, who are based at Lords, have called it to be free to air. Again, because it is such a historic test match in terms of England versus Ireland, it's going to be a four-dayer, not the usual five-dayer. And yeah, it's just going to be, you know, the first of many, hopefully.
Well, on that note, we have got guests coming on later to discuss that game. In fact, we've got several guests today, as we always do. We tend to start the week strong, don't we? We spoke about this yesterday and we tail off badly.
Oh, big time.
At the end of the week. It's a car crash normally, Thursday, Friday. But certainly today, do stay tuned, because we've got lots of quality guests.
Yeah, well 100%. Tim Murta, who plays for Ireland, of course. He's actually an absolute legend of the game, it must be said. He's got an incredible number of wickets. He's just gone past 800 wickets, actually, for Middlesex as well. So, fair play to Tim. He's going to be coming on at 9:45. I mean, well, you were just saying there about what happens towards the end of the week. I mean, people don't even know, but actually what I do on a Friday is I sit at home on a Thursday night and I just record various phrases into my phone.
Yeah.
And then that's actually what you're hearing coming out. I'm not even here.
You're not even here. Just a recording. It's very cleverly done. We have actually got some interesting... We're going to have a discussion later as well on gender perception in sport.
Yeah, we are. Two white men in the studio discussing gender perception in sport. It's fantastic.
Promises to be really insightful. So do stay tuned for that. We're going to be going through...
Just as we desperately drip over each other, so that you go, oh, no, I'm not sexist. And Rich isn't. How wonderful that neither of us are sexist.
So if you want to hear the most awkward conversation on radio this morning, do stay tuned at 7:05.
I'm absolutely fine with it.
Yeah, that's going to be a very short section, I feel. We'll have Kelvin McKenzie on as well. He's going to be talking interesting story, this one. I say interesting, not particularly positive story, but this one in regards to Carl Beach.
Oh, gosh, no, that's absolutely horrendous.
I was going to say, I've killed you. I've gone from a very funny subject to one that's not very funny at all.
I was still laughing, and this is absolutely not a laughing matter at all. I mean, this is actually probably one of the more shocking news stories that of recent years, I would have thought, where Carl Beach, who's probably known to most people as Nick, made some very lurid, very graphic, very detailed claims about a notorious paedophile ring that included such prominent figures as former prime ministers like Ted Heath, former heads of MI5, MI6, prominent military figures as well, and of course Jimmy Savile, although, you know, Jimmy Savile definitely did do a lot of bad stuff. There were a few issues around this, which is that he was essentially believed wholeheartedly, this lad Carl Beach, not just by the police, but it would appear as well also by Tom Watson, who's the deputy leader of the Labour Party, who stood up in Parliament and made quite an impassioned speech about this. And you know, this calls for him to resign now as well. But also the police basically just blindly believed this chap. In fact, there was a statement released by the police that said that his claims were credible and true, which, before you've actually done an investigation into it, just seem a little bit bonkers. His claims included such things as MI5 killed his horse and his dog as a threat. And he's like, well, it was at the height of the troubles with Northern Ireland. I very much doubt that the head of MI5 has taken time out of that car bomb incident to go and shoot your dog in the face. But anyway, the police decided to believe him. And so this dangerous fantasist has now been outed as actually just a liar.
Wow, incredible story. Plenty more going on today as well. Let's go back to sport, shall we, briefly. So Danny Thebaoth.
Right, yes.
Yeah, on loan.
I like that pronunciation.
Yeah, I've spent all morning. In fact, I didn't read any papers this morning. I got in nice and early and I've just been practicing that. So hopefully we talk about him a lot today because I feel like I've got it nailed.
Yeah. Thebaoth.
Thebaoth. Is it a good move for Arsenal? I think it's a great move because...
It's made me feel a bit dirty.
I think it's a great move because I'm going to get to say his name a lot.
You tell me about it. What do you know about it? What's his bag? Is he going to be a good fit, do you reckon? He looks like he's got quite a lot of talent, I would have thought.
Yeah, no, look, he's a big name for a start. He's a great name.
Fantastic,
I can say it all day. Look, it's about time Arsenal did something. So I think that's the positive to this, first and foremost, is that it's been very, very quiet on their front. I mean, we talked earlier, they've got this transfer budget, apparently of 40-odd million, but it doesn't seem like a lot is going on at all at Arsenal at the moment. You'd be a little bit worried if you're a Gunners fan, you would think. It does fascinate, actually, going into this season, the fact that we look at the top six and their transfer dealings as to who's had the best window and who's had the worst window. And it's been a bit of a mixed bag, really. Chelsea, of course, are hamstrung because of their two-window ban. Arsenal just don't seem to be doing anything at all. They seem to be, and I appreciate that we've still got a couple of weeks left of the window. It might end up being that they have four or five targets they're very close to and they end up bringing them in, but obviously it's a little bit concerning to me at this point and so little action going on. Tottenham have had a pretty good window, to be fair, to bring in Ndombele. I know that Jack Clarke, he's gone back out on loan, but Ndombele, if they bring in one more, you feel like they're going to be pretty strong. Liverpool, I want to talk about a bit today, because I think that I'm a little bit worried about how they're going to start the season. I think that they've got a few issues, obviously a lot of tiredness. They didn't finish their season until very, very late because of the Champions League final. A couple of stories in the papers today speaking about the fact they've lost a couple of pre-season friendlies. I mentioned to you, a good friend of mine actually played for Liverpool so randomly, but Andy Lonergan, who's been released from a couple of clubs, but they're so light on goalkeepers at the moment, he ended up going away with them and ended up playing against Sevilla. So there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes at Liverpool at the moment.
I mean, that must be incredible for him. So what, he was without a club, yeah. And then what, Jurgen Klopp essentially rings up and says, do you want to come on tour, lad?
Yeah, so basically more so the goalkeeper coach. So he knows the goalkeeper coach who was the goalkeeper of Tranmere for many years. A very good goalkeeper coach. He knows Andy Lonergan. Andy Lonergan's sort of been on the scene, obviously, for a long time. Good career in the Championship, mainly at Preston, but also played a few other clubs in the Championship. Last 3 years, hasn't really had much of an opportunity. He's been at Leeds, he's been at Middlesbrough, more as a number two or a number three. Got released from Middlesbrough, hasn't been able to find a club so far. So he's been scratching around. And it was John Akterberg, the coach at Liverpool, said to him, do you want to come away with us? We're light of a goalkeeper. Obviously with Simon Mignolet, it's a little bit up in the air as to what he's doing. Alisson, who's had a long summer, so he's been given a little bit more time off. So Andy Lonergan's gone away with them and they've thrown him in for a game. So from his point of view, he did brilliantly. They lost to Sevilla 2-1, but he did excellently. And if nothing else, if nothing works out of Liverpool, you'd think it'd be an amazing platform, amazing springboard to go and find a club.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it, really, how things can change for you, and you just got to be ready to take that opportunity when it comes, I suppose. But do you reckon there's maybe a chance he might find himself as a Liverpool player?
Possibly. Like we're seeing with a lot of the top clubs now, they need a number three. West Ham, of course, went for David Martin, which was a bit of a surprise from Millwall. No one really saw that one coming. Lee Grant, who's gone to Man United. Of course, Rob Green famously played that role at Chelsea, where effectively you're a training goalkeeper. It's very rare that you're ever needed. So what kind of character do you want? And ordinarily, the ones I've all mentioned, they're all older goalkeepers who are British. So he fits the mould. He's a great character.
Avid Brexiteers.
Yeah.
To a man.
It's really important.
Oh, yeah. Massively. But have you or have you not got a flagpole on your front lawn? And if the answer is yes, you can be a third choice goalkeeper at top flight.
Liverpool will take you and we'll pay you a lot of money. 16. This is Love Sport. We're going to be talking a little bit of Chelsea very shortly. What have you made of Chelsea this summer? Obviously, they've only been able to bring in the one player. Several have left. Are you slightly concerned for them going into next season?
No, not really. I think they've had a better transfer window than Arsenal, haven't they? And Arsenal haven't got a transfer ban, for goodness sake. So, yeah, Chelsea are doing all right. I quite like this new outlook that they've got. You know, all right, it's been a bit forced, but if they spend a year now blooding some youngsters, getting their best young players, you know, some good top-level experience, and then they maybe add a little bit of stardust again next season. I think they're banging the mix.
Yeah, one of the players we're going to talk about, and we'll have someone on the line shortly to talk about, is Ethan Ampadu, because he joined Bundesliga side RB Red Bull Leipzig on a season-long loan. Interesting that he's gone to Germany as opposed to going to, say, the Championship. What do you make of that?
Well, I know that, you know, he might regard the standard of football in the German Bundesliga to be better than that in the Championship. I'm not sure. The fact is as well that German clubs are renowned for giving young British players a run in the team. Well, young players generally, actually, a good run in the team, a good stint in the team. Does he get that in the Championship? Mm. You know, I do wonder as well, when you go abroad, like, if you have that bad game or you have a bad run of a few weeks, actually, does anyone really notice? Mm. But when you slap the ball into the back of the net from 20 yards or whatever, and that goes on YouTube and everyone notices that, is it easier to hide? Is there less risk potentially for going abroad to your reputation, do you think?
I guess that'll be part of the argument. I mean, I personally think, given some of the success that we had last year in the Championship, and I know that Jadon Sancho will always be brought up as the Bundesliga example, and he is a brilliant example as to someone that's gone there and absolutely smashed it, and of course made his way into the England team on the back of it. The bit that we're always going to find hard to gauge is just how good the Bundesliga is. Because my personal opinion is that I think you've got a blend of Premier League and Championship, maybe even a little bit of League One, all in one league. Because I think you've got top end, of course, is Premier League. You know, your Bayern Munichs, your Dortmunds, is our top-end Premier League. But then you go down the bottom of Bundesliga, I think it's low-end championship, if not even top-end League One. So this is where then it's very difficult to gauge just how well a player is doing if they're going to the Bundesliga, whereas we know exactly how well they're doing if they're going to the championship.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true, actually. But I don't know. I suppose it's just more about maybe they've gone, right, well, look, if you've got him earmarked to play for Chelsea, you know, for the foreseeable future, he's a player of the future, then actually, is there much point sending him to the Championship to play in a bit of a league that's probably got a bit more rough and tumble to it, as opposed to the Bundesliga, which doesn't, I don't think. And, you know, is it actually just worth his while to develop his technical skills, free from maybe some more of the physical elements, and go to Germany, as opposed to go down the Championship and playing against someone who looks like Dean Windus's big toe every Saturday?
Indeed. Another player that's been linked with Rebel Leipzig is Ademola Lookman from Everton. They're saying it might be worth £22.5 million. Interesting player, Lookman.
Yeah, he is. So Leipzig have got a policy, or certainly had a policy anyway. I'm just having a look to see exactly how old Lookman is now, where they wouldn't buy anyone who was over the age of 21, I believe. And obviously they've got that resale value, they're young and hungry, etc., etc. So, I mean, again, look, you know, it's an interesting model, isn't it? But I just can't look beyond the fact that they're called Red Bull.
Yeah, does that upset you a little bit?
It does a little bit. It's like in America, do you know what I mean? With some of the kind of the commercial elements, now we're going to the FedEx Arena. Mm. Yeah, it's like, feels a bit dirty.
Yeah, Red Bull, they are kind of making their mark, though, aren't they? It's not just, obviously, Leipzig. They're involved in several different clubs now.
Where does it end? You know, you don't have, like, Viagra United, do you?
Maybe in time. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of jokes around that, which aren't coming to me just yet.
No, do you reckon they'll face stiff competition?
Very good. There you go. Well, look, joining us now to talk more on German football, the links, of course, between the Premier League and German football, is expert Kier Rednidge. Good morning, Kier.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. Let's start with Ampadu. We've been talking a bit about Ampadu this morning. Obviously, he's gone to Leipzig on a season-long loan. Are you surprised that he's gone to Leipzig?
No, not necessarily, because I think this is a club who are building... They're trying to sort of build a new face, if you like, into German football. They're newcomers up into the Bundesliga in the last couple of years. They've got... very wealthy backers in terms of Red Bull company, and you know, they're looking to make a name for themselves. They've had quite strong links with English football. They've looked very hard at the English market because they really do think that, you know, following the example, particularly obviously in recent years of Jadon Sancho, that there's a lot to be gained from coming and fishing over here.
Well, exactly. I mean, RB Leipzig, they're like Katie Price, just trying to reconstruct that face, aren't they? But can you settle this debate for us, OK? That the Bundesliga is not as good on the whole as the Championship. What do you reckon?
No, I think it's certainly better than the Championship. I think it's a better quality of football. I think it's overall a better quality of players, and I think it's more technical and tactical as well. I also think the Bundesliga down the years has been certainly one of the most entertaining of the European leagues, because there has been, if you like, a little less emphasis on defence and a little more emphasis on offensive, creative football. You know, I mean, this is a stable, you know, from which we've had, you know, Jurgen Klopp coming out. So that's... speaks for itself, I think.
Yeah, well, exactly. And look, it's not, you know, nothing is left to chance, is it, in modern football at the moment? And so it should be quite telling that the likes of Ethan Ampadu have presumably chosen the Bundesliga over the Championship. I mean, that should say probably all that we need to know about that. Do you feel as though, you know, we're going to see more young English players going over and plying their trade in Germany? Why is it exactly as well that the Germans seem to be looking at England so closely at the moment?
Well, I think the Germans are looking at England in particular and this market of youth players because their clubs cannot afford to compete at the high end of the transfer market, you know, apart from Bayern Munich, can't afford to compete at the high end of the transfer market in terms of money. And therefore, they're looking, you know, for the next tier down of talent, if you like. And the young players are particularly well... versed in the game now in the academy system in this country. The problem is for them that they can't get into Premier League teams to show what they can do. And if you can't play regularly in the Premier League, your chances of making it up into the England team and sticking there are extremely limited. And therefore, you know, the idea now of going abroad, and particularly to Germany, where you have a similar, I suppose, an easier culture to fit into than with some other European countries, is very, very tempting.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, if we do end up with more player quotas, more homegrown or English-born player quotas over in the Premier League, then I suppose that the players that have gone to Germany are going to command a very, very hefty price tag for the clubs to buy them back, aren't they? Which could be quite a good business all round, you would have thought. So Zahar as well, potentially linked with Bayern Munich. Now, I mean, it would, I suppose, make a bit of sense, wouldn't it? Robin and Ribery are on their way out. Do you think there's any chance whatsoever that the Palace man might be playing his trade with Bayern Munich next season?
You know, you never say never in football. I'd be surprised if Zaha went there in the end. I tend to think that Bayern, certainly from what the talk that's coming out of Germany, are looking for someone who's a little bit more experienced. Yes, they do have gaps on the wings to fill, but they do have talented young players of their own, Kingsley Coman, for example. And, of course, there's been the perpetual link with Leroy Sané as well. So that maybe they're just trying to stake out the ante a little bit with Manchester City.
Potentially. Want to get you a little bit on Jadon Sancho as well. We can't really talk about young English footballers playing in Germany without mentioning his name. However, he's currently 11-4 to sign for Manchester United before the transfer window closes. Do you think that's a possibility, or is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in dreamland?
No. I think it is a possibility because basically Dortmund are a selling club. You know, part of their business model really is turning over players, bringing on players, if you like, benefiting from their success and then benefiting from the profits to, you know, go and invest again. The one thing that was interesting last season, the German magazine Kicker, for which I work, had a survey of all the Bundesliga players, and Jadon Sancho was by a long way top of the picks of the Bundesliga players for the, you know, the most outstanding newcomer into the Bundesliga. You know, so his peers in Germany really think an awful lot of him, and therefore, you know, I would suggest that any English club, you know, worth its money and worth its view to the future would be interested in him.
Also, there's rumour, Philip Max to Liverpool, potentially?
Yes, that's been mentioned. Whether that comes off, I'm not sure. Obviously, Liverpool are looking for you know, extra cover. He might be a good deal for them. I'm not quite sure what the price might work out as. But I think also it's interesting from Liverpool's point of view. They spent very heavily last year, calendar year. So presumably they're looking to, you know, just to plug, you know, more careful little gaps with a view to the future. They've got some very good young players of their own, of course. So, you know, I'd certainly expect them to go back to the German market. It's an obvious one for them.
Great stuff, Keir. Thank you very much. That's Keir Radnage there, German football expert, giving us the latest on, well, several potential moves from both Premier League to Bundesliga and Bundesliga back to the Premier League.
I only ever go to the German market around Christmas.
Love sport.
Alexis Sanchez playing the piano.
Yes.
Sevilla kidnapping Jesus. Navas.
What? Oh, right.
John Terry joining Aston Villa via a WhatsApp chat. The social media signing video has become as much a part of the modern game as coloured boots and VAR. But what's been mainly the domain of press teams has now been turned over to the fans of non-league AFC Fylde. Joining us now is head of media for AFC Fylde, Luke Lambourne. Morning, Luke.
Good morning, gents. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're good, thanks. Yeah, I'm intrigued by this. Can you tell us exactly what you're doing differently for your signing announcement?
Yeah, so essentially, the idea kind of came around. We were, myself and my boss, we were just driving along and thinking about new ideas we could do it. And I think he said, you know, something along the lines of, you know, almost everything's been done, which kind of reminded me of that quote in 1889 when someone said that everything that could be invented has already been invented. So we kind of tried to turn it on its head a bit and see, you know, what hasn't been done, essentially. As in my job, I try to be as kind of interactive with the fans as possible. So I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity to actually turn it around on them a bit and see what ideas they've got.
So what's the setup now then, basically? Do people get in touch with you and say, oh, I've got an idea for how we could do a signing reveal?
Pretty much, yeah. We've had loads of different ways people have got in touch with us. Some have been literally just like one sentence. Some have been paragraph on paragraphs and really kind of like intricate ideas. And they've all been really different. And some of them have been, you know, quite traditional. Some of them a bit out there, so to speak. So it's been good reaction.
Can you give us any examples of like just any ones that have been a little bit wacky?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We had one guy suggest that the new signings trying to, so he's essentially running down a corridor, being followed by men in black suits, and it kind of transpires that he's actually trying to escape Area 51.
I like
which to us it was an idea. I looked at it and I was like, you know what, it's quite funny, but I'm not sure whether or not they're going to go along with that completely. So. But we've had, yeah, there's been some really really out there ones, which has been good to see, to be honest, because the idea was essentially to try and, you know, get people involved, and it's been good.
Well, it is of course going to be a masterpiece, I'm sure. So what tools are you going to give the fan in order to make the most of this?
Yeah, so essentially it was what my own press kit is, which is a camera, an iPhone, a green screen. They've got the stadium here to use, little bits and pieces like paper, blue tack if they need it, you know, just to try and...
Oh, you've gone all out then. You've supplied
blue tack.
Yeah,
make them think creatively. And I think crucially as well, we gave them a budget of £10, which they can be creative with. And to be honest...
Are they allowed to spend that all at once or not?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean... Okay. Some people, one idea which you like was someone suggested spending a tenner, going down to Audi, spending all the tenner on beer, getting the manager and the get the manager and the chairman pretty drunk, then they start throwing darts at a board full of players, and whoever it lands on is who they sign. And
nice.
The idea was that it's got like Messi, Neymar, blah blah blah, and then actually it lands on the person that we sign. But
yeah, who will be just
seems a bit harsh on the person we're announcing.
Yeah. Can I just, have you already signed someone and you're waiting for the reveal, or are you also waiting to sign someone? Oh, so you've got it locked and loaded?
Yeah, so it's actually going to be taking place today. Coming in a little bit later on. So I actually spoke to him yesterday and
he's starting to give it away.
Narrows it down.
Narrows it down to 3 billion people.
Absolutely. Okay.
Spoke to them a bit and they were going along with it, so it's a nice day as well, so I think that might change what kind of one we go with, because there's some ideas that take place outside and there's all sorts really, but to be honest, the idea was the easy part. Now it's actually the crunch time where you've got to try and work out how to make sense of it all.
Yeah, okay, so just give me another example of one of the ones that was quite weird and wonderful, because the other one was brilliant, the Area 51.
Off the top of my head, one I really liked was, again, the ones that are better are the ones that are like one sentence, and it was the whole team are playing football in a forest, .. then the new signing joins them. And in my head it didn't really play out too well. It didn't really make too much sense, so I was trying my best to try and work that one out. But another one was, because we're right next to a KFC near the ground, so someone was saying that you go around the drive-thru, you know, you've been looking for this new player and you can't find him, and then eventually you get to the last menu and he's there serving you your food.
Nice.
Oh, that's good. That's good. All right, actually.
Yeah,
that was quite a good one,
but to be knocking on the door of KFC this time of the morning seems a bit...
I'll see you there.
Well, I was going to say going in with it'd be a bit awkward going in with a film crew, but you're not really. You're going in with a camera and an iPhone, so maybe you could do it. They wouldn't even realise.
Yeah, to be fair, we could.
All right, so today, then, obviously, you're going to meet this new signing yourself and, you know, have a chat with them. And then when are you announcing who has won this, you know, competition to actually sort the video out? And when are they going to be filming this video?
Well, it's all taking place today.
Oh, it's all of it? Oh, gosh, right.
Yeah. We'll actually be filming it ourselves, essentially just using their idea.
Got
putting it into place.
I can't wait to see
it. So they'll see it when the video goes out. Which is exciting.
This is a brilliant idea. No, I'm really excited to see this. So we'll certainly keep an eye on this. In fact, we'd love to get you back on the show if that's all right. Because no doubt we'll be able to see this later today online. Is that going to be will it be released later today?
You're not sure what time yet. Obviously, there's a lot of things to get done in between. But hopefully later on today.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. Okay, Luke Lambourne, thank you very much. Hopefully we'll be able to get you back on and see exactly how this went. That's Luke Lambourne, AFC Fylde, Head of Media. I love this idea.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic.
What would you do? See, I'm thinking we could go back to some of the old school adverts. Do you remember the one where they're in the airport? I think who cares about naming brands? Nike. When it was their one, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure it was, going through the airport. And it was great. All these world-class players kind of, you know, with all the standard things in the airport. It was a lot of fun. So I think if you were going to announce a player, how do you do it? I quite like the KFC one. That was quite a nice idea.
Yeah, I'm thinking of it now. Like, how could I do it? I reckon, like... you know, if you, so it's the anniversary of the moon landing, so you could just get like, you know, like a camera or like a telescope and just zoom in on the moon, just keep zooming in, keep zooming in, keep zooming in, keep zooming in. There's me waving at you.
Yes.
You know, like something like that, maybe.
That'd be quite cool.
Yeah.
Or like the dream that every football fan has where they're sat in the stands and all of a sudden one of the players goes down like, oh, no, we have no substitutes. Oh, no, who do we get to come and play? And they look in the stand. We want you. And they point at a certain person. Oh. It's like, oh, wow, me, really? And then you come on and you're the superstar and that's the new signing.
It's weird because, like, for me, that was a dream I had. And then you did it, didn't you? You went and did it for your career and stuff. So,
yeah, I love how genuinely happy you are for me. That's what feels best.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. These tears are happy tears. They're happy tears, absolutely. Yeah. Also, I was thinking maybe they could combine it with some charity work. So, like, you give the £10 budget here.
Yep.
You go out onto the street, you give £10 to a homeless person.
Yep.
Something, and then the homeless person, like, takes their hood off, and that's your new signing. And he keeps the tenner, because I imagine if you play for AFC File, that's the last time you'll see one of those.
Love sport. Okay, so behind closed doors. Patrick, please introduce today's behind closed doors.
Okay, well, Rich, fantastic celebrations. So, as we've seen with Jofra Archer, who, after the England's fantastic Cricket World Cup win, has decided to fly back to his native Barbados and have it absolutely large. And I was just wondering, Rich, you know, when you win things, did anyone ever celebrate too much? Are you being constantly judged by your coaching staff and everyone? Are they always monitoring you? You know, like when you're sat at a team meal or something, do they keep a note of exactly how much everyone's had to drink and stuff?
I love how you've just come up with that off the cuff. It's very, very impressive. Very good. That is why you're the best at what you do. No, Jofra Archer, credit to him. If there's a time to do it, now is the time to do it. And I know he's got a slight injury, so of course he's got a little bit of time off. Going back to Barbados, enjoy the moment. One of the biggest issues, I think, with sports and with athletes is that you can always get caught up with the next thing. You mentioned it. Actually, a great example. England win the World Cup. What do? They have the tiniest, smallest, little celebration, and then they're straight back on it. You need to enjoy those huge moments, because the truth is, as a sportsman, you're going to have more lows than you are highs.
Yeah, I'm not being funny, Rob, but I know that they get paid a lot of money, a lot of these top sports stars, but actually, I don't think people quite understand this sheer level of work that they do, and the fact that you don't really get any time off, and yeah, it is bonkers. Do a lot of footballers actually struggle with that, with the fact that they don't have any time off whatsoever?
Well, more so now, like you say, the very best footballers, they'll have, like you mentioned, Sadio Mane. You're talking 2 weeks off a year, which is, I mean, it's not a lot, really, bearing in mind how intense it is when you are involved. I know people talk a lot about training. Training's only maybe a couple of hours a day, 3-4 hours a day tops, and you get a lot of time off. But actually, it's more the fact that you're so structured that you will be training 6-7 days a week more often than not. You know, you normally get 1 or 2 days off a month, realistically. So it's very little downtime. And even when you have your downtime, there's always another game just a couple of days away. So you're forever preparing for the next game. So to actually just switch off, unwind, even for a couple of weeks, it's vital. Otherwise, you see, you know, people talk about burnout. Now, burnout is mental more than physical, but it is a mental burnout if you just feel you continually ongoing game after game after game. You don't get that little bit of respite.
Have you ever burnt out?
I think there's times where mentally I've just lost interest. Yeah, where you get to a point where you just feel that it's Groundhog Day. You're going in and you lose motivation. And that's part of it as well, is you lose a bit of confidence, maybe you lose a bit of motivation, inspiration for what it is that you're doing. And before you know it, your game has dipped that little bit. And then it's that vicious cycle, because then, of course, your game dips, you play a few bad games, you lose more motivation. And that's where I have massive credit and massive respect for the very best in the game, because I think user likes Ronaldo, Messi, whoever it might be, for them to continually have the motivation to push themselves to new levels, that is an incredible mindset to be able to continually do that with very little breaks. Because certainly Ronaldo and Messi being great examples, over the last 15 years, the combined amount of time off they've had will be absolutely minimal.
Yeah, well, it looks like we're going to get a winter break for the first time ever now in this country. What do you make of that? Yeah. Do you think that's a good thing or not?
I think it is. I mean, from what I understand, it's a bit of a half-hearted winter break in that it's one weekend off. So it's, you know, they've actually this season for the first time they've got the alternate weekend. So rather than 10 fixtures over the course of a weekend, they've got 5 fixtures one weekend, 5 fixtures the next weekend. So I mean, there'll be alternate weekends off for every team in the Premier League. And I think they're putting certain things in place to say they can't travel abroad and play games and make money and what have you. They need to take that time off. But realistically, it's a regular international break. For those that aren't involved in the international scene, it's a regular international break, which as a championship player, for instance, you get four of them off a season, which are great. You get 3 or 4 days off ordinarily, and that might be an opportunity to go to Spain for a couple of days. But it's not really a proper break, I'd say.
Yeah, interesting. Well, did you used to do that when you get that weekend off? Did you used to jet off somewhere?
Yeah. I mean, Dubai is the one that most would go to just because it's not too far away.
Can you just go there for just a couple of days,
well,
really?
Do you know what's ideal? And this is a bit geeky, is the fact that you can fly overnight. Yeah. So Dubai, you normally, let's say you finish training so they normally give you, for instance, you have the game on the Saturday and they give you, say, Sunday, they give you off till Thursday. So you've got Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So then you could then fly on the Saturday night and it would mean you get a full day, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and maybe fly back Wednesday night. So you could still get a good solid break away. And it's that guaranteed sunshine. Certainly in January, February, you know, you might go to Spain and as nice as Spain is and as nice as the weather is, in January, February, it's not that good. Mm. So more often than not, you'll see players go to Dubai in January, February, if they can.
What's one of the most extravagant things you've ever seen a footballer do?
Oh, that's a tough question.
You don't have to name them, no. But like, I'm just quite keen. Has there ever been a moment where you just look around and gone, for goodness sake, that's like too much?
Well, do you know what? I think the clubs I played for, of course, weren't, you could argue, top end. I mean, when I was at Blackburn, and I've mentioned this before, Craig Bellamy turning up in a helicopter from time to time.
Yeah, that's a bit.
That's quite extravagant.
Did he have to? Where did he live?
Well, that was it. I think he'd gone back to Wales, for instance, for the weekend. So he then got a helicopter back to Blackburn. And he used to drive like a McLaren, the Mercedes McLaren, which is a fantastic car. Yeah, so he was reasonably extravagant, I guess. But again, because I was always at clubs that were maybe top-end championship, low-end prem, we're not. And also the money. By the way, even in the last few years, it was, what was it, 10 years ago that I played in the Premier League, the amount that it's changed since then. You know, we talk about inflation. The average wage in the Premier League then, as opposed to the average wage in the Premier League now, is probably 4 or 5 times as much.
Yeah, but probably one of the issues, I know where we started this by actually talking about Jofra Archer, the fact that the England fast bowler has been given this test match off against Ireland, the first test match that Ireland have played, the first one against England, and it's at Lords as well. That starts tomorrow. Now, Jofra Archer was rested because he's a shoo-in for the Ashes, you would assume. He's probably going to open the bowling for us during the Ashes. But he's been given the time off to rest. Mm. And what we can see is that he's at, you know, various carnivals around the Barbados area, wearing his England team shorts, actually, grinding on what we certainly hope is his girlfriend.
Yeah, he is. Right, the only thing to this is, should he be allowed to party? Yes, he should. He does need to have a certain amount of respect for the fact that he's got an injury and the fact that alcohol will increase inflammation. So players will often find the natural thing to do is, when you know you've got an injury and you're out for a month, instantly you do switch off a little bit and you might go for a night out, or you might start to explore a different side of things. But of course, if you've got an injury, alcohol will increase inflammation in the joints and in whatever injury it is. So it could slow down the healing process. That's the only issue. Look, we don't know if he's been drinking, by the way. We know that he's been partying. So we don't know exactly what he's been doing. The chances are that he hasn't been drinking, so he should be absolutely fine.
This is Love Sport.
The final furlong.
It is. Yes. It is.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, a reaction from
the
you.
The final furlong. No, that's not right, is
countdown.
It? Yeah.
Right. Great voice. We're going to be talking cricket very shortly, because of course there is a game of cricket going on starting tomorrow.
Absolutely. Very important game of cricket, Rich. So England are playing Ireland at test level for the first time. It's going to be taking place at Lord's tomorrow. It's England's warm-up game for the Ashes. Of course, it's going in a couple of weeks' time. England hoping to build on their Cricket World Cup success. A few interesting elements to this game as well. Not only, obviously, is it Ireland's first test match. Ireland's first test match, especially against England as well, at the home of cricket. Those Irish lads are going to be really, really pumped up. And indeed, we're about to get one on the line. Tim Murtagh, Middlesex bowler, and Ireland stalwarts as well. But this is it. You know, it's a good day out for absolutely everybody. But the issue that we've got at the moment is the top of our order. So, you know, we really don't know who's going to be opening the batting in the Ashes. There's rumours that, you know, Jason Roy might be given the bat at the top of the order there. You know, he's done so well at the Cricket World Cup. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Also, Jofra Archer is currently in Barbados at a carnival, actually. And Jimmy Anderson's out injured as well. So we'll have to wait and see what England team lines up.
Indeed. Ireland's fast medium paceman Boyd Ranking says he has no regrets over playing for England as he prepares for his country's 4-day tests at Lords. I believe we've got a little bit of audio.
Test cricket is Test cricket. Like, it's going to be tough going. Like, going to be really warm as well. So I think like it's going to be a tough 4 days for us. But yeah, like I think if we get a result here, like it's going to be pretty hard to beat that.
The 35-year-old will this week stride out at the home of cricket in just Ireland's third test and their maiden one on English shores. Joining us now is Ireland Middlesex bowler Tim Murtagh. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, gents. How are we doing?
Good morning. Yeah, we're good. You. Hope you are too. This is a bigger match than some are making out to be, isn't it?
Yeah, it's massive. You know, it's massive for us. It's, you know, Test cricket. It's Test cricket at Lords. You know, it doesn't get much bigger and better than that, especially for a kind of a novice nation in the Test arena. So, all our guys are kind of really looking forward to it. And, you know, it's going to be a pretty special occasion.
Do you think that, obviously, look, in the past, you had players like Owen Morgan who clearly felt it was best for their own personal development, perhaps, to end up playing for England, right? But, you know, is that shifting now? Do you think, you know, in a couple of years' time, we'll have seen Ireland establish itself on the Test circuit, as it were, and that we're going to, or a few years' time, maybe, and actually that young Irish cricketers now will just stay in Ireland?
Yeah, I hope so. I think sort of young guys playing the game in the country can now see a pathway to getting into, you know, the Test team, and you know, we're in the Future Tours program now, so we've got a lot of fixtures coming up. We're in the 12-team ODI league, so we're playing against all the other countries in the top 12 of the world, sort of home and away over the next 4 years. So there's definitely more of a kind of pathway and I guess a future for younger guys growing up to kind of aspire towards. So yeah, I don't see too many guys leaving like perhaps they did when Owen did and other guys who came over to play county cricket. I think that might be the end of that now.
Yes, well, potentially. I mean, what's the mood like in the Ireland camp? That's what I'm quite keen to gauge, because you guys aren't there to just make up the numbers. I mean, you're going to go and obviously do everything you can to win the game. Is there a level of confidence there?
Yeah, there is. You know, we're under no illusion how difficult a task it's going to be, and you know, we'll go into the game as massive underdogs, which is kind of where we do our best work sometimes. So I think everyone's just sort of looking forward to it more than feeling the occasion. That's, you know, the message that I'll try and get across to guys who haven't played so much cricket. Just, you know, try and enjoy it. And, you know, the pressure, there's no pressure on us at all, almost. All the focus is going to be on the England guys, who does well, who's going to play in the Ashes Test a couple of weeks' time. So hopefully we can kind of sneak under the radar and sort of surprise a few people.
Yeah. On a personal note, you've got a good Test bowling average in your two matches. Obviously, this is your home ground, effectively. So do you fancy your chances?
Yeah, definitely. I know the ground well. I know, you know, pretty much all the England players I've bowled against in county cricket over the years, and have an idea on sort of what I want to do to them in terms of my plans. And you're right, sort of being at my home ground as well, it's going to be a really special week. I just need to make sure I walk up the stairs and go the right way into the away dressing room, not the home one, which I've already done once on the training day. So, it's going to be a special week.
You're on some kind
week.
Of spy mission or something.
Yeah, I kind of got to the door, I was about to walk in, and then I was like, no, wrong one. Back down the corridor.
Now, look, everyone tells me, I think when I spoke to you last, actually, we were doing Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup show, and he was made a big point out of the best tees in the world are at Lords, he says, according to him anyway. Are they, in your opinion, and also, do we know what's on the menu for you guys tomorrow?
100%. The thing with Test Weeks is we've had 3 days of training there, so we've had lunches there as well. Oh. So we're actually getting a full week of Lord's lunches. So, and we've had morning training sessions the last 2 days, so we've got our work done. Then it's up to the lunchroom and kind of fill your boots. So,
brilliant.
Sunday was the first day. Yeah, we had roast beef with all the trimmings. Of course, you have soup as well, so you have, you know, a full three courses. And then a chocolate tart to finish you off if you've got any space. So, yeah, it's you know, pretty special in terms of the whole kind of package of the ground, the food, the way you get looked after. So, yeah, it's something we're all kind of soaking up.
You've just made me incredibly hungry. I haven't had breakfast yet either, so I am definitely going and getting a roast lunch after this. Random one for you. On ESPN Crick Info, your nickname is Dial M. Want to explain that one?
Dial M, that came from Dial M for Murder used to be a TV program, apparently. Dial M for Murder. Dial M for... Yeah. I wasn't quite sure of it. I remember being given it by a few of the Middlesex hardcore fans when I first joined, and yeah, they called me Dial M, and I didn't know what it meant to start with, but yeah, that's where that comes from.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, isn't it? Anyway, 800 first-class wickets. Can you put into words what a massive personal achievement that must be? I'm going to say that again, because I want that to sink into our listeners. 800 first-class wickets, Tim.
Yeah, it's something I never thought I'd get anywhere close to when I first started playing. I remember I started at Surrey, and Martin Bicknell just took his 1,000th first class wicket, so I've got a bit of a way to go. But I remember thinking as a young kid, like, oh my goodness, that is ridiculous. I'm not going to get anywhere near that. But you just kind of keep plodding on. I guess I've managed to stay sort of reasonably fit throughout most of my career, not miss too many matches. And since I've moved to Middlesex and Lords, it's kind of worked really well for me, so yeah, it's a massive achievement, but you know, there's a few more to get this week, and then you know, for the rest of the season.
We've been talking obviously from the England perspective here quite a bit this morning, talking a bit about Jason Roy. You're expecting him to be ultra aggressive against you at the top of the order?
I am, yeah. I'm not quite sure what to expect. You know, I think he will look to be aggressive, but you know, I don't think it's going to be quite the you know, the 50-over sort of form that he's shown in terms of running down the wicket every ball and hacking it out the ground for six. But, you know, he might do that. But, yeah, we're kind of prepared for both sides of it, prepared for him to play properly and prepared for him to have a bit of a dip at the top. So, you know, I think it's going to be tough to go out and play the way he does in white ball cricket, in red ball cricket. But, you know, he's a very talented player. I've played a lot against him over the years and know him quite well. So,
big question: have you got him out before?
Yeah.
Got him. Sorry, I just have to do that every time there's a wicket.
He's also whacked me out of the ground a few times as well. So there's been a bit of both.
Yeah, fair enough. A bit of give and take. But look, is this going to be something that changes the game a little bit in terms of the Jason Roys of this world, where you look at them and you go, right, okay, maybe you can open the batting at test level, and then all of a sudden you just find them on, and I'm sure this won't happen tomorrow, by the way, you just find him on like 200 off 50 overs or something, and you're just like, right, okay, do you think this might actually just be like a different type of test cricket?
I don't know, it kind of remains to be seen. Sort of further down the line, you know, it's going to be very hard against some of those Aussie boys, you know, with a brand new red ball in their hands to play the way he does in one day cricket. But I don't think he needs to play like that. I think he's technically good enough to bat properly as well. So I think you'll see that from him. I think sort of he's improved a lot with his defence, and he's obviously been looking to get into the test team and says that he wants to bat at the top. So yeah, I don't think it's going to be completely gung-ho. I think he's a better player than that, and I think he'll try and show that as well, that technically he's good enough to kind of negotiate the new ball.
Good stuff. Well, look, I am half Irish, so I've got split loyalties tomorrow, but I will be, we'll definitely be tuning in. And all the best, Tim, as well. Wishing you luck on that, on your home surface there. I'm sure you can add to those 800 wickets as well. Tim Murta there, a Middlesex and Ireland bowler, on it. What is going to be a historic test between England and Ireland tomorrow at Lords, the home of cricket.
Indeed. Something we didn't actually touch on was the fact that, you know, we spoke about the weather and how hot it's due to be next day or two, how that will impact this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, you would have thought it would nullify some of the traditional English conditions, especially some that we saw play out at the Cricket World Cup, where swing came into play because it was muggy, it was humid, and the ball was, you know, kind of deviating more off a wet wicket, digging in, potentially more of a tennis ball bounce as well. Well, we're not really going to get that, you would have thought. If the skies are clear, the pitch will be hard, you would imagine, and it would probably play quite straight and true. However, there is always something about Lords. There's a very slight slope. England don't traditionally play that well at Lords. So it is an exciting game, because I saw Nasser Hussain come out and he said something I thought was absolutely spot on, actually. Where basically just said, look, you have to understand, you might have just won the Cricket World Cup, but for Ireland, this is probably the biggest game of their careers.
Mm.
You know, they are going to be upping their level. They're going to be an extra 25%. You have to be ready for that.
You do indeed. That brings us on to... In fact, we are now coming to a close, of course. We've only got a few more minutes of us, and then there will be Bell and Sperling next. Do we have a theme tune for winners and losers yet?
Don't be stupid.
No, we still don't. But that is what we're moving on to now, is winners and losers. So go on, Patrick, kick us off.
Winner, Jofra Archer, teaching the stuffy suits at the ECB exactly how people should be celebrating. He's flown off to Barbados. He's grabbed his girlfriend, at least we hope it's his girlfriend, around her waist. And they've been to a carnival. Well, it's all kicked off. And it's Jofra Archer. What a hero.
Hashtag live your best life.
Yeah.
Winner, Danny Ceballos, having his name so beautifully pronounced by me all day.
Mm. Loser, Danny Ceballos, having his name pronounced by Rich all day.
Very funny. Winner, Boris Johnson, what a guy.
Well, yeah, and just to keep you abreast of Boris Johnson's now, I would say, inevitable ascension to the realms of Prime Minister, that's going to be happening at 11:45. Bojo is going to be our PM, probably.
It looks likely. Go on, have you got another one for us?
Yeah, loser, Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale, despite the fact that he is actually literally on paper a massive winner.
Mm.
He's won 13 trophies at Real Madrid. And he looks like he's just wasting the end of his career. I know that China have come into him. And I hesitate to call someone a loser when they might be on the cusp of signing a contract worth £1 million a week.
Yeah, what a loser.
What a total loser. Yeah. Nerd.
Signing a five-year contract, £250 million contract.
How do you get out of bed in the morning, Gareth?
Yeah.
I bet
this is really impacting him.
Yeah, but because of my rather warped sense of what's right and wrong, I think he's a loser because he's just decided to just swan off to China. Not decide.
Okay, this is still very much speculation, of course. But that are the rumours in the story that he may get a £20 million signing on fee, of course.
How long do you reckon it'll take them to complete the signing?
It could take them a while. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of due diligence they'll need to go through before they do end up signing him. A winner, David De Gea, could be the new Manchester United captain on top of a huge deal. He's due to be the most or the highest paid goalkeeper in the world if he signs his contract. 6-year contract.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. Incredible stuff. I mean, you know, the thing is, though, it just piled pressure on him. He was already under a lot of pressure at the end of last season. It looked like he checked out mentally. It looked like he didn't want to be there. And as I've said before, if it wasn't for a dodgy fax machine, he'd still be a Real. He would have been a Real Madrid player for many years now. So, but it is huge pressure. He's making the right noises, though. And I'd quite like to see David De Gea as captain as well.
It would be interesting. Loser, Nasser Hussain, our very own Kieran Wellington, gave him a barrel of abuse earlier.
Yeah, what was going on with that? See, he's not a big Nasser fan. Having said that, though, like, Nasser's kind of... It's funny, isn't it? Because a lot of these players just simply wouldn't make it in this day and age. But I think they're a different breed, the modern cricketers, aren't they?
In fact, something that's just come out, Ben Stokes' statement. So, I'll read out the first bit of this. I'm flattered to be nominated for New Zealander of the Year. I am proud of my New Zealand and Maori heritage, but it would not sit right with me to be nominated for this prestigious award. There are people who deserve this recognition more and have done a lot more for the country of New Zealand.
It's like when Ed Sheeran won the MOBO award.
Yeah.
And it's like, just say what MOBO stands for. And it's like, well, that's not Ed Sheeran, is it?
Yeah. Here's next thing. I have helped England lift a World Cup and my life is firmly established in the UK since I was 12 years old. So anyway, this goes on. Have a quick look at that if you get a chance. I'm going to throw in one more winner very quickly. Jo Swinson. First female leader of the Lib Dems.
And the youngest leader of the Lib Dems as well. 39-year-old, born in Glasgow, looking to kind of restore the Lib Dems to their former glory, really.